This is the Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs, meeting in Hearing Room B at 1 o'clock p.m. on April the 18th, 1977.
Be knocked it off the court now.
We'll call on Keith Wilson with the WCB first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Keith Wilson, Chairman of the Workers' Compensation Board. We're indicated on your sheet that I'm testifying in favor of Senate Bill 1050. It appears that during this session of the legislature, the matter of restructuring the board and the constituting a department and a board has considerable impetus. The governor has announced that he is in sympathy and supports the concept. Of course, Senate Bill 1050 speaks to this philosophy, and there are other measures also that have been introduced which attempt to deal with the restructuring of the Workers' Compensation Board, which it's been called up to this point in history. Rather than offering Mr. Chairman a number of arguments in favor of Senate Bill 1050, I prefer, if with your indulgence, to review with you or to testify very briefly as to the board, present board's philosophy in this regard, and also to tell you how we view the conceptual approach to the restructuring, and then to point out to you some of the difficulties as we see it with the bill as it's presently worded. First of all, let me make it very plain that the board, by virtue of the governor's position and a great number of other interests, have expressed themselves as in favor of the concept. First off, our concept of the legislation, as it ideally should be worded and phrased, is to plainly place all administrative and regulatory functions of Chapter 654 and 656 in the department under the director, except for those functions that are specifically reserved for the board. The director should be vested with the rulemaking authorities which are presently contained in 654 and 656. I'm speaking about the ORS chapters, except those specifically reserved for the board. That the director is to furnish such administrative, fiscal, and personnel services as are required by the board, and that the medical director, legal counsel, the Industrial Accident Advisory Committee, and the Advisory Committee on Medical Care are appropriately the responsibility of the director. I might interpose the thought that the governor's concept of this restructuring would preserve the three-man board with the elements of public representation, labor representation, and employer representation as a type of advisory panel to the director. Now, speaking about the function which should be assigned to the newly constituted Workers' Compensation Board. The board, as I mentioned before, is comprised of the three board members. The appellate should be carry with it the appellate examiner and their staffs, and that they should be a part of the department for the purposes of being serviced by the administrative, fiscal and personnel components of the agency, but as strongly as possible be autonomous as pertains to its own administration, its own budget, organization, and its personnel requirements for its adjudicatory and its rulemaking responsibilities. In other words, what we're striving to attain is to prevent a tug and pull between the newly constituted board and the director in these areas. Furthermore, the hearings division with the responsibility for conducting such hearings and other proceedings as may be prescribed by law, by referees employed by the board, as otherwise provided in Section 28 of House Bill 2658, prior to any amendment thereof, is under the board, and the person administering the division is responsible solely and directly to the board. And that person, of course, would be the presiding referee under the existing statute. However, the division will continue to perform those fact-finding and Safe Employment Act, Administrative Procedure Act functions required by the director in administering the statutes. In other words, what we're attempting to do and what we suggest to you is to divide very plainly the adjudicatory function of the workman's compensation system and the administrative and regulatory function so that there's clean and distinct lines of demarcation. The board is vested with rulemaking authority to accomplish its responsibilities of supervision over the conduct of contested cases by hearings division under 656, Chapter 656 of Oregon Revised Statutes, supervision over the conduct of contested cases by hearings division under Chapter 654, which is a Safe Employment Act, limited to the modified Administrative Procedures Act for resolving its disputes under this act. Reviewing opinions and orders of the hearings referees, reevaluating total disability awards as previously awarded, conducting reviews under board's own motion, and establishing guidelines for the determination of the extent of disability for compensation cases. The administrative policies pertain to the administration of the Safe Employment Act and all other matters where the Administrative Procedures Act is applicable will be under the rulemaking authority of the director. Just let me mention, Mr. Chairman, very briefly a few of the problems that we, as we see it, appearing on the face of Senate Bill 1050 as presently worded. First, it builds in repeated delays of hearing and forces a hearing-like proceeding in the evaluation division before a hearing may be held before a referee. The offending provision is, quotes, no evidence is admissible at a hearing that has not previously been considered by the evaluation division. This is Section 8, page 10. This encourages an insurance carrier to piecemeal evidence to the evaluation division until it gets a determination it likes.
You're objecting then, Keith, to that second hearing?
We feel that this, the present wording builds in still another level of litigation, actually, before the evaluation division in its present wording. The second problem is that the present wording may bar a great number or most of the workers from own motion relief by the insertion of the words, quote, made by the board in Section 7, page 9. Continuing jurisdiction is limited to those relatively few claims which are originally litigated to the board level. This would encourage initially litigating claims to preserve the right to seek own motion relief in the future. In order to get a decision of the board, it might mean litigating claims to that level in order to preserve own motion relief sometime down the road. It multiplies Court of Appeals caseload to a point that it may be intolerable to the Court of Appeals by deleting the circuit court while retaining the right of de novo review by the Court of Appeals.
We could have that on the record only.
Pardon?
To the Court of Appeals on record only.
Yes, this is our suggestion. The criticism, Mr. Chairman, is presently made is leveled at the board for giving up its responsibility of determining policy in workman's compensation program in the state of Oregon. The reason, it seems to me, is very obvious, that with the multiple levels of de novo appeal, the last forum which exercises de novo review and has a right to affirm or modify or reverse,
okay,
as a practical matter, is the one which determines policy of workman's compensation in the state of Oregon. We're second or third up the ladder. The Court of Appeals is the last level. Presumably the Supreme Court could, but doesn't as a matter of practice, consider many of these cases. So the result is that the Court of Appeals, for all practical purposes, has been and properly should be, under the present wording of the statutes, making a decision in these matters. We suggest to you that the review at the Court of Appeals level, if you wish to prevent this or keep it from being perpetuated, should be limited to the substantial evidence rule or some limited type of review. Another problem is that this, as 1050 is presently worded, subjects referees to the director's control. A dissatisfied worker or employer has the right to a fair hearing before an impartial referee. The hearing is the only day in court a person gets under this system. Whoever has administrative and budgetary control over the hearings division holds the power to intimidate and influence the outcome of cases. The director has a natural interest in having the actions of his evaluation division upheld when challenged. Therefore, the director should not be tempted with administrative and budgetary control over the hearings division. This control should go to the Independent Workers' Compensation Board, which would have no other interest than administering the program on the merits and no interest at all in rubber stamping department action in individual cases. The proposal subjects the review board to the director's administrative and budgetary control. And I've mentioned this before, that it seems to me at least, and I think to the board unanimously, that insofar as possible, there should be autonomy in the board to control its funds and employees if it's to remain impartial and independent, albeit that this presents some problems in the preparation and discussion and approval of budget. There are several provisions in the Act as presently worded which present some internal inconsistencies. For instance, the bill has the director appealing his own final order in Safe Employment Act cases. This is in Section 40, page 28. The board stands ready, willing, and able, Mr. Chairman, to work closely with this committee or with any subcommittee that might be assigned to the task of reviewing 1050 and offering its services in amending the opposing amendments and attempting to implement the concept which I've explained. At any time that if you wish this assistance, we offer it to you.
Thank you, Keith. We really appreciate that. Keith, do you feel now with the elimination of the Circuit Court that it's more important than ever to retain the independence of the hearing officers. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
This is one belief that I have, yes. As I've had explained to you many times in this and prior sessions, the appeals process now comes from a fairly confined area where there's a chance to accomplish some uniformity and apply some uniform policy, and then it branches out to some 50 judicial districts in the state of Oregon, so that the matter of consistency is dissipated. And if a strong board with the policy-making function and responsibility is established, then certainly the consistency of the referees' decisions can be improved a great deal. Not
any questions over there?
Mr. Chairman, could I have your indulgence just for a moment? Friday, I think it was, you considered Senate Bill 1049, and at that point in time I was not present, but there was a remark, some testimony offered by Mr. Kennedy, a very good friend of the board, incidentally, and my personal friend, and as I understood it, the testimony was not accurate, was not the way that he intended for it to come across, and we'd like to have the opportunity, I think Mr. Kennedy will ask for that opportunity to explain that problem to you today in his testimony. I'd like to have you...
Mr. Kennedy has signed up, Keith, and he will...
Thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Trow?
Mr. Wilson, do you have suggested amendments?
Yes. We have some very rough ones, Senator Trow, and can polish those up and be ready to go at any time that the committee wishes.
Fine.
Okay. Roy Green.
Chairman, Mr. McAllister, come up also.
Certainly. Robert McAllister. Roy, do you want to lead off? Or?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roy Green. I'm here today representing the Associated Oregon Industries in support of Senate Bill 1050. We concur with the general philosophy expressed in the bill. First, we believe that an injured worker should be allowed more administrative consideration of his claim than is contemplated in the present law. We feel that if after the initial evaluation of permanent disability...
What's administrative consideration? I mean,
rather than court consideration.
Is this supposed to be better or...
It is in workman's compensation, yes, sir.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It should be submitted to the evaluation division for redetermination. We have recommended amendments to accomplish this. If the worker has impairment as a result of his injury, substantiated by competent medical evidence, he should receive whatever award is proper without the necessity of employing counsel. If he is dissatisfied with that redetermination, he can request a hearing as provided currently in the law. We believe that this will eliminate a substantial number of hearings. Secondly, we concur with the elimination of the circuit court in the appeals procedure. Thirdly, we agree that the administration of the workers' compensation law should be centralized in a director competent in workers' compensation and administration. Our board of directors would prefer to retain the policy-making decisions with the Workmen's Compensation Board, which represents the views of each of labor, management, and the public. The director would be empowered to carry out those policies. The board also would retain its appellate duties. We are suggesting amendments to accomplish this also, together with changes in the existing criteria for selection and appointment of the board members. Fourth, we believe the Industrial Action Advisory Committee should be of greater assistance to the governor. This group of 9 members, all interested in the administration of the law, can give excellent counsel to the governor and thereby to the board and the director in recommending possible changes in policy, administration, and the law to produce a more effective and responsive workers' administration, compensation administration.
What? How could they be more effective? I mean, they're appointed. Why aren't they? If they're not effective, what you're saying is, evidently they're not effective now. And why aren't they effective now? What can we do to make them more effective?
Well, as I understand it, Senator, the committee, the advisory committee, has made certain recommendations to the board, but they have not necessarily been accepted or put into practice.
Okay.
I'd like to elaborate just for a little, if I may, on the areas of getting more administrative determination of claims and less in the area of courts. We want uniformity in administration of all claims, but especially where impairment exists. We concur in retention of the Workmen's Compensation Board as an appellate body to reemphasize the uniformity of decision at the evaluation division, hearing, and board review level. It allows one group of 3 men representing all 3 views to give the final administrative decision on a claim. We would like to minimize the amount of litigation while still allowing the worker to pursue a claim in the courts when he feels he has not been fairly treated. However, we want the case to have a final court determination rather than let it drag out. In other words, go directly to the Court of Appeal. Over 50 circuit court judges, many of whom hear workman's compensation cases only infrequently, are rendering decisions. Obviously, they cannot have the uniformity of decision that will be evident from the Court of Appeals. I'd like to bring out the fact that in the 1976 report of the Workmen's Compensation Board, there were 6,263 appeals to the hearing referees and 793 appeals to the board, 367 to the circuit court. We feel that if the re-evaluation or redetermination is made by the evaluation division, and the evaluation division is made a statutory division by this bill, that the number of appeals to the hearing referees will be cut sharply, and hopefully the number thereafter going up the scale in the areas of litigation. Mr. McAllister, who is a member of the Industrial Accident Advisory Committee as the self-insured representative, will detail and explain the amendments, copies of which I believe you have.
My name is Bob McAllister, and I want to make it clear that I am here today representing Associated Oregon Industries and not the Industrial Accident Advisory Committee. I have no authority from that committee to come before you. Let me run through some of the proposed amendments. Some of them are very minor and constitute word changes or shifting of sections around in the proposed bill. On page 8, line 7, after determine, delete under. So that line would read, further compensation including permanent disability award of any, period, and determined under the director's supervision would be deleted because that is really what the director is going to be doing anyway. In line 9, delete line 9 through 16 and insert the following language. And as you know, this language, that's on page 9, I'm sorry. When a determination order is sent out to the injured worker, the language that is on the present determination order, we feel, simply encourages that worker to litigate his case. So we would propose that that language be changed to read as follows. If you are dissatisfied with this determination, you have the right to ask the evaluation division for reconsideration of the determination. No attorney is necessary. If, after reconsideration, you are still dissatisfied, you have the right to ask for a hearing. You do not need an attorney, but you have the right to retain one. Payment of attorney's fees are payable out of any increased award and are set by the Workman's Compensation Board. On page 9, after line 29, this section has to do with the board's continuing jurisdiction. Insert a new subsection 4. Notwithstanding subsection 1, 2, and 3, the board shall not have continuing jurisdiction over denied claims.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Wires.
I hear I didn't think I was going to be in here protecting lawyers' fees, but here I go, doing it, I guess. On the fourth line of your statement to the, and fifth line of your statement to the injured worker, you do not need an attorney, but you have a right to retain one.
That's correct.
My English grammar isn't the best, but it seems to me that that the word right and the word need somehow don't balance there. The word, it seems to me that it would be a more forthright statement to say, if you're going to say you have a right to retain an attorney, but you don't have to have one, or you could proceed without one, it would be more straightforward to say you're not required to have one, or you can appear without one. When you say you don't need one, that's kind of a conclusion, I think. Yeah. Don't you think?
I would agree. And our conclusion is that if this system is turned around and works in more of an inquiry type of setting rather than an adversary litigious type of setting, that our words may be prophetic, that the worker may not need an attorney.
Well, but
nonetheless, I do agree with your point, Senator.
Oh, do agree with my
point. I agree with your point. Okay. I think we're being a little bit optimistic, perhaps.
Okay. Or if you were looking at it from the injured worker's point of view, it might be another word than optimistic that could apply. Well, then you are not required to have an attorney or something like that. Wouldn't
yes.
be a problem for you?
No, that would not be a problem for me.
Thank you.
Who drafted the amendments?
Alder Thurman, Boise Cascade, myself, and Chet Beal from Weyerhaeuser Company. Let's see, on page 10. In line 11. After the word no, insert medical and vocational evidence. So that line would read after the period, however, no medical or vocational evidence is admissible. In line 12, after the period, insert the following language. Prior to issuing an opinion and order modifying a determination order, the referee shall review the facts with the evaluation division and consult with them regarding such modification.
Why would they, what's your reason for that?
Well, several. One is to upgrade the status of the evaluation division. It's being made statutory.
You'd lend more weight.
Lend more weight to their and beyond that, to help promote uniformity in the system, we feel that
With the evaluation division, wouldn't they prejudice that these people are judges, hearing officers? Couldn't this prejudice the judge as far as his opinion is concerned, if he's going over with the evaluation division? Why have a hearing then?
I don't think it would. I don't think it would tend to prejudice the hearing referee's position. It would give him access to a larger body of expertise in those areas where he may need it.
I'd say he has access to the files now, does he not? I mean, an evaluation division.
Yes, he has. He has access to the files.
Why should he discuss the case before hearing it? You know, they're appealing. Obviously, they're appealing the case.
No, we're advocating that he discuss it after he has heard it, and go to the evaluation division if he has a particular problem with any of the evidence, and that he shall discuss that with the evaluator. This is pretty much the system that is.
Do they do that now?
I don't know. We would.
They could. There's nothing in the law that would prohibit them from doing it.
Well, but we would like to have them encouraged by the statute to do it.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Trill?
I'd like to back up to the previous comment you made. As you put medical and vocational between no and evidence up above.
Yes.
What's your reasoning for doing that?
Well, the evaluation division is looking at a determination of the extent of disability, and in Oregon, the extent of disability is determined basically at that level on the basis of medical reports and or reports relating to the injured worker's vocational status.
But the no is, you know, it really just eliminates that kind of evidence, additional evidence anyway, doesn't it? So why do you have to specify it? And if you do specify it, are you...
Well, what we're trying to do is to clarify so that it doesn't specify that no evidence, because there is evidence that we would hope could be introduced at the hearing that would not have been.
What other kind of evidence are you going to allow being introduced then?
At the hearing.
Yeah, at the hearing.
At the hearing. We would, that evidence that goes to the extent of the man's disability that's in terms of lay testimony, witness statements. We want to prevent making this reevaluation process.
In other words, the
hearing
was too broad before you.
It was too broad. We want to narrow it.
You want to narrow it just simply to medical and vocational.
That's right.
But other kinds of evidence is admissible. New evidence. That's
at the hearing.
Okay.
Right. Without having been reviewed by the evaluation.
All right. That's
excuse me, Senator. One of the problems that we run into now is the fact that once the evaluation division has made a decision, then the next step is to go to the hearing officer.
Yeah.
Now, if a workman has a medical examination which shows that he has greater impairment than was initially shown in a prior medical examination, the only way that he can utilize that is to go to a hearing. Now, when he goes to a hearing, normally, he is represented by counsel. Now, this means that he has to pay out of the increased amount that he gets, if he does, for that counsel. But yet, it's on the basis of, really, a medical substantiation of an actual impairment. We feel that if he has that impairment and he has that medical evidence, then it should be given to him without having to pay for it. And reevaluation by the evaluation division is a method of doing it.
You see, the thrust of this is to promote the inquiry aspects of the work comp system rather than the adversary aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. I can see that, but all I'm seeing here is that before that you had a statement that said no evidence is admissible at a hearing that's not been previously considered by the...
Yes, and we're...
Now you're restricting it to medical and vocational, which does mean then that other kinds of evidence may be introduced. And I was just wondering what that kind of evidence was going to be.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Quick
Senator
question.
Wires.
Mr. Green, were you, in your testimony before we got on the amendments, were you agreeing with Keith Wilson that the hearings should stay under the Workman's Comp Board rather than going to...
No, I am not, sir.
I guess I didn't...
It stays under the department.
Under the department?
Yes.
Under the director,
yes.
Mm-hmm. You want the workman's comp board under the jurisdiction of the director?
No, the hearings officers.
Hearing officers?
Yes, sir.
What, they lose their independence? Don't you think we're giving up enough? I mean, as far as the workman's compensation board with elimination of the circuit
the
hearing officer should maintain their independence, Roy?
Well, their independence is really based on the information which they elicit as a result of the hearing. And I can't see that this compromises that area at all.
You don't think it would affect their independence if they were under a jurisdiction of the director?
I think no more than they're affected currently under the board.
Well, they still, I think it was, what was it, 73, what session that we gave the hearing officers independence?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the legislature felt at that time that they are essentially their judges, and they should be independent, not under the pressure of a director or the board. They should be independent, mm-hmm. and we stress this. And I think with elimination of the circuit court now, where they had a right to appeal and heard before a circuit mm-hmm. court, and the judge there certainly retained his independence. And if we take the independence away from them, they're under pressure from a director.
Well, there are.
We have some real problems.
In the first place, we have some other amendments here that pertain to that, but we actually have not, with one exception, have not interfered at all with the current law, other than to replace board with director.
Well,
Senator Wires?
I guess it'd be just redundant, but I want to say it anyway. Whether it takes one word or 100, it you're favoring shifting them out away from the independent status they have now.
No, there isn't any change in, as far as I can see. Am I in error?
Correct.
Well,
what was Keith Wilson talking about then?
Well, I'm not exactly. Well, he's exactly sure. The amendments that are in here, in this bill, change the wording from board to director, basically. And other than that, I can't see that it is changing anything.
Well, Mr. Wilson testified that directors have budgets to make and this kind of thing that sometimes affects the attitude and orientation of people working under them.
Well,
I won't belabor this now. We've got another bill in judiciary that would attempt to make most of the hearings officers put them under an independent board for this very reason, because there's a great deal of feeling that when you go in front of a hearings officer who's reporting to a director, that he becomes little more than a fact finder to support the findings and decisions of the director.
Well, under the current law, the hearings officer report to the board. This 1050 does not change the fact that they are reporting to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bit.
Just changes who they report.
That's right. And we have some amendments which might even change the idea on that also. So it's far less traumatic than it would appear here right now.
You're changing on the record.
May I go on,
Chairman?
Yeah, there.
My comment would be that a board, the troika, the three-person board, is a little different than a single director in terms of reporting to it.
May I go on?
These guys.
Yes. Did you answer that? Did you get your question answered, Cliff?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got it. Stonewall.
Okay. On page 12 in line 19, which deals with the authority of the Court of Appeals, we've taken out that language that permits the Court of Appeals to look at additional evidence. Just from a practical matter, we just simply don't think we're going to do that. So all of line 19 after action and all of line 20 before the period before the would come out. And line...
Why would you do that?
It's simply as a practical matter, the Court of Appeals can remand and probably would simply remand to the board for the taking of further evidence rather than having that evidence argued at that level, new evidence.
But is it your intent to then restrict it to on the record review?
No, it would be a de novo rule.
For who's that? Now, the hearing officers?
No, this is the Court of Appeals. Okay?
Why?
And as a practical matter, we really have no argument with it, except that we're saying as a practical matter, in our opinion, the Court of Appeals will not do what it says here. That they will simply remand to the board to take new evidence.
Well.
That being the case, why do you need to take it out?
Yeah.
We're just trying to be practical about it. I'm not really hung up on it.
Hearing examiners on the record only instead of de novo, I would just assume have the Court of Appeals in this instance have it on the record or new evidence and put the hearing examiners leave them where they are under the de novo review.
Well, we're suggesting that the de novo review be retained, of course, by the board, and that it be retained by the Court of Appeals with elimination of the circuit court, as simply as another check and balance to the system, rather than going from the board to the Court of Appeals on substantial evidence.
The effect of taking this out, though, it's permissive language anyway. It says the court may hear if it wants to. If you take it out, then they may not.
That's right.
So it becomes restrictive if you take it out. It's permissive if you leave it in.
Well, as I said, we're not really hung up on that. We just, as a practical matter, from the actions of the Court of Appeals in the past, they simply remand to the lower court or the lower administrative agency.
That power is there. Clearly, they can do that if they want. But should they, for whatever reason, want to do this other, if you take it out of the law, then they can't do it.
That's true.
Can you give me your reason for wanting the hearing examiners taking the de novo review away and putting them just on the record? What was your thinking behind those that drafted the amendments?
Well, Senator, we're not doing that. We're saying that the procedure in terms of the hearing examiners or
the bill,
referee.
The bill itself does that, right? It's not the amendments, but the bill itself.
The referees would continue on as they have, hearing the evidence with an appeal to the board on de novo and then removing the circuit court and an appeal to the Court of Appeals. Correct?
No. Page 10, line 11, however, no evidence is admissible at a hearing that has not previously been considered by the evaluation division.
We're eliminating that to medical and vocational.
Medical and vocational. So the evidentiary hearing is
okay,
really...
Okay, but you're cutting down the scope of hearing referee review considerably, even if you just exclude medical and vocational evidence.
But it's not excluded. If it has been examined by the evaluation division.
That has not been previously considered?
If the...
You can't introduce new medical...
You can't introduce new evidence unless it has been previously examined by the evaluation
division. Correct.
So all that is going to require is that the evaluation division will examine new medical and or vocational evidence, and then it can be introduced at the hearing.
Well, it cuts down the present scope.
It cuts down the scope and makes
okay,
it thank
you.
More of an
we
inquiry system.
And we said it didn't a moment ago, but it does considerably.
It does.
Thank
right.
you.
Okay.
Okay, then,
what is the sign?
On page, page 20. Line 20. Delete. I'm sorry. I'm back on page 12. On page 19, delete line 15 through 18.
What's the reason for that?
Let me get my head together here.
You delete line 15 through 18 inclusive, is that it?
Yes. And insert new sub 3, which says the hearing division is created within the department. The division has the responsibility for conducting such hearings and other proceedings as may be prescribed by law. And all that it does really is remove the language, which we think is simply surplus, that they would...
You're taking out it just.
Yeah, we're just taking out that which they're charged with doing anyway, and just saying that they are going to conduct hearings and other proceedings as may be prescribed by law, and not specifically telling them what their duties are.
In other words, they could or they could not have, depending on the director receiving claim evaluation, determination is ward made by the evaluation division, and these other things that are set out in that particular...
Well, they do that anyway, Senator.
Why take it out, then?
Yeah. I can understand.
Well, the question is, why put it in?
But it's already in. Why fool with it?
Yeah.
Well, this is a new
Unless
section.
Unless it really does something of substance, why don't leave it alone?
Well, I don't have anything.
Well, we're not hung up on it, except I think that the hearings division, it says that in the present language, the division has a responsibility for receiving claim evaluations. And I really don't think that they do. They have a responsibility for reviewing claim evaluations if, in fact, a party requests a hearing and asks that they review a claim evaluation.
So that's what you'd like to change?
Yeah.
That part.
Then delete lines 19 through 21 on page 19.
19?
Yes.
Delete
and
lines
in, yes.
20 and 20.
19 through 21 and insert a new sub 4. The department shall be administered by a director who shall be responsible to the board. The director shall implement policies which shall be promulgated by the board.
Okay.
Are you taking away the governor's right to appoint?
No. We're simply moving that to another section.
The governor would still...
The governor appoints.
Case appoints.
But we feel that... the system needs that check and balance of the troika, if you will, of the board, setting overall policies pointing the direction that the system is going to be going. And then delete lines 22 through 26, and we're simply moving that to another part of the bill. In line 32 on page 19, after persons, insert shall, and in the same line after appointed, delete as, and insert based on administrative and executive abilities. So all we're saying is that the board members, or the people the governor appoints to the board should have demonstrated administrative and executive abilities. Then we say delete line 33 through 35 and insert the following language. The three board members shall represent respectively the interests of employers, employees, and the public. Appointment of the employer representative shall be made from a list of at least three names submitted to the governor by a recognized statewide organization of employers. Appointment of the employer representative shall be made from a list of at least three names submitted to the governor by organized labor. Appointment of the public member must be concurred with by the employer and employee board members. Then a new sub three, the board shall elect one of its members to serve as chairman for a term of 2 years, with no more than two consecutive terms. On page 20, line 1, delete 2 and insert 4. This is just a renumbering. In line 5, after the first member, insert, except that the initial terms of office shall be 4, 3, and 2 years, respectively. We had, in our first draft of this, had 6 years as a term for the board members, but I understand there's a constitutional prohibition against 6-year appointments.
Just for judges.
And then there are renumberings until we get to after line 13, still on page 20, insert a new one. Shall develop policies designed to assure achievement of a successful workman's compensation program. And then in line 14, delete promulgate and insert shall promulgate. In line 16, delete administer and insert may administer after line.
You're going to have the board may, and then down there you're going to have shall?
And we're going to say that they shall promulgate rules and regulations. They may administer rules.
Did you say on line 13, what did you do there?
In line 14, we're deleting promulgate and inserting shall before, shall promulgate.
Okay, what's on line 13 above that?
Line 13. We're deleting may. I'm sorry, in line 15.
Oh, that's nice. All right, good. And does that follow for 2 also?
Yes.
Is it? It's always...
Except for 3, which would be may administer.
Okay.
After line 18, new section 27A, the director shall be appointed by the governor, subject to unanimous approval by the board. The term of office shall be 4 years, but the director may be removed by the governor prior to the expiration of his term for inefficiency, neglect of duty, or malfeasance in office. Sub 2, the director must have proven administrative and managerial ability and demonstrate a strong knowledge of Oregon's workman's compensation program and its goals. 3, the director has a responsibility for all administrative and operational functions except as provided in Section 27, which of course addresses itself to the board's duties. And then a new 4 is the same as the language in the bill as drafted, which just speaks to the salary and travel in terms of the directorship. Okay, then on page 22.
Mr. Chairman, all 4 is lines 22 to 26 of page 19.
Of the present
Of the present bill.
On page 22, delete what? Lines?
I know. I say all the subparagraph 4 is the wage on page 19, lines 22 to 26 that were taken out. We just put it in a different place is all.
Just putting them back in a different place. And on page 22, delete lines 15 through 22, which provides for the election of a presiding referee. And we would simply delete that and leave it to the administrator to appoint an administrator of the hearings division.
The administrator
the director to appoint an administrator for the hearings division, just as he would for any other division of the board. In then there's some renumbering in line 23, delete 6 and insert 5. And on page 23, line 24, after the delete administration and insert evaluation, our position is that the director doesn't administer claims, he evaluates them. That is, the carriers and the self-insureds and SAFE administer and handle claims under the regulatory regulation of the board or the director. On page 25, line 10, after the delete director may and insert governor shall, and that relates to the Industrial Action Advisory Committee. And again, as Mr. Green has pointed out previously, our rationale there is that it would give the advisory committee a little bit more status. And then on page 31 in line 8, which of course would not be codified, it would just simply add to the end of the sentence, and the newly appointed board and director shall assume their duties at that time, which would be at the time of the effective date of this act.
Okay, are there any further questions that any member of the committee may? Yes, Senator Wires.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2 of the proposed amendments, the one that starts out, delete lines 33 through 35 and insert, the last sentence in that paragraph says appointment of the public member shall be concurred with by the employer and employee board members. What percentage of the employees in the state are members of a union? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Would you think it would be in the order of 90%, closer to 90% or closer to 70%?
I think that probably Mr. Kennedy could answer that. I have really no idea whatsoever.
If it is assuming without deciding that there are a lot of people in Oregon who work who aren't organized in a union, would the public, and also assuming that there are a lot of people who have an interest in the outcome of workman's comp claims who aren't employers or industrial employees, or employees for that matter, does it really represent the public to allow these two organized groups, designees, to veto the public member appointed by the governor, which this apparently would do, have to have a concurrence?
We think that it would promote the efficiency and the ability of the board to function as a unit. And I can't answer your question. I feel that considering the manner in which those board members are appointed now, that this would be no worse and probably somewhat better. But that's really not answering your question, Senator. I simply can't answer it.
I guess my question is kind of a statement, to be fair to you. I'm saying that it looks to me like to have a public member appointed that way wouldn't really be a public member. They'd be a compromise member.
That's right.
It might be a more accurate way to say it. And
in truth, we lifted this language from the Washington Workers' Comp, their Industrial Insurance Act.
Mm-hmm. So we have the product of their best thinking.
Right. Right. And it seems to work well for them.
In their infinite wisdom.
Yeah.
Senator Droll?
Your amendments, you have a new section 27A, which deals with the appointment of the director and some things about the director. Had the bill had not really
dealt with that in any way before? This is all in new language, right? It's not in the bill?
No, this is, some of the language in 27A is in the bill.
Is in the bill elsewhere?
Yes. The director shall be appointed by the governor is in the...
How about the unanimous approval of the board? Is that in there before?
No.
So that's new.
That's new.
Three-person board, they must unanimously approve the appointment of the governor before it's final.
That's right.
Is that done generally anyplace else?
Not to my knowledge. Yeah. Well, I hope that it might be successful here.
But here, as far as you know, that's...
As far as I know, it is not done anyplace else. Mm-hmm.
You're putting the governor on, or you're putting the board on the spot. If the board doesn't approve the appointment of the governor, they're liable not to be on that board too.
That's right.
Too long, you know. So, I think the language is certainly unnecessary. Yeah. Any further questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
David Prager?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dave Kreiser, attorney from Albany, representing the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I have prepared some written testimony and some exhibits, which I don't know if you've received yet or not, but you will shortly.
Just coming now, Dave.
Fine.
Bring a pack mule along with you today to carry all this stuff?
Pardon me?
Pack mule, yeah.
Senate Bill 1050, in my opinion, deals with two major areas. One is the change in the administrative system, that is the compensation board regarding appeals and administration, and also changes regarding the court system beyond the board.
Louder, please.
Sorry.
Pull that microphone up to you, Dave, if you will.
Dealing first with the compensation board changes, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association would oppose Senate Bill 1050. This bill creates a single administrator, as you have heard, and relieves the present board of those administration duties. Historically speaking, there was a purpose for a three-man board, and as we know, it represents and primarily consists of a representative of industry, of labor, and of the public. The old SIAC, or State Industrial Accident Commission, was comprised of the same representatives and has been since 1910. The old adage that the power to appoint is also the power to control is one which we should not lose sight of. Having been a referee with the Workman's Compensation Board, I can tell you without any question that the power of the board insofar as influencing decisions, policies, rules, and regulations is a very awesome one. The power is always there, and it is whether or not the board chooses to exercise that power and to use its influence upon its employees that is tantamount. The board is not likely to attempt to use that power in that manner due to the makeup of its representatives representing three interest groups. However, if you have a single administrator or director, there is no check and balance insofar as his decision to exercise his authority is concerned. On page 23 of Senate Bill 1050, lines 15 through 26, and that's the portion that deals with the powers of the board as the bill sets forth, you can see that the director has the authority to make and declare all rules and regulations to reasonably perform his duties, which is the same authority that the present board now has. However, added to the present board's authorities on line 24 through 26, the director is not only given the authority, but required to prescribe a uniform method of determination of awards for various permanent disabilities. Having previously heard testimony regarding Senate Bill 1049, you can see that this is a very complex and far-reaching area.
It is one which affects thousands of people in this state, and in my opinion is not an area in which one single individual should be given the authority or the mandate to prescribe any rule or regulation which he feels is correct in determining permanent disabilities for workers. In fact, this may be an unconstitutional delegation of authority by the legislature. We feel strongly that
Yes, Senator Trope.
What's unconstitutional about it?
Well, there's several cases which I've researched, which I have in my testimony regarding 1049, that where the legislature gives authority to one particular individual or to a body to make rules to affect not if permanent disability will be awarded, but how in every case, and can change that at any time, the legislature has no control over that. It has delegated that authority to that individual. And these cases that I've cited in my previous testimony say that's unconstitutional. Now, we're talking about, Senator, not broad guidelines.
Yeah.
We're talking about...
I see what you're talking about, but I just, you know, where in the Constitution do you find any prohibition? Isn't that done fairly often by...
It's separation of powers.
Okay.
We feel strongly that the appointment of such a director is a political appointment that is subject to political pressures. That director then becomes a political appointee and given the authority and the mandate to prescribe uniform rules and the authority to change the entire evaluation process as we presently have it. I would think that this legislative body would not want to require a single man to come up with uniform regulations in such a complex area. It should be pointed out that the so-called experts in this field on a national level cannot agree upon what is the best method of evaluating permanent disabilities. If the experts cannot agree, how can we expect a lone individual to come up with any meaningful and objective rules of evaluation? If I personally wanted to control the workman's compensation system of this state, this is exactly the type of bill I would propose. If I had the political clout to have my hand-picked individual appointed as a director, knowing what his feelings are concerning disability evaluation, I would lobby and push for this bill. I do not believe, however, that this legislature wants that kind of a system, but this bill in that respect would require it. Let us keep in mind that in creating a single administrator or director of the Compensation Board, this departs from over 50 years of legislative policy and experience in having a truly representative administration of the board through representatives of all the interest groups.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Trope.
Craig, why would one be any more concerned about whom the governor would appoint as director as would be the composition of the board that he would appoint?
I mean, as it presently exists?
Yeah.
Well, because in the board, you have, assuming you have representatives of the three interest groups that can check each other. But if you have one individual with all that power, there's no check.
But wouldn't you think then the governor, in appointing, and since he'd have to get the approval of the three people...
Well, that approval, Senator, was not in the 1050.
Was not in the bill.
Right.
But assuming the governor, you know, has the best interest of the state in mind, as one should assume the governor would, I don't see why you should be any more fearful of the director than you would be of the...
Well, I'm sure the governor does have the best interest in the state of mind, but there's also political pressures.
Again, I would think that the board would be fearful of ever turning and not accepting the governor's recommendation in this instance, so whoever, whether they agreed with the governor or not, they'd probably accept it. I feel that there's a problem area there as far as the board is concerned with labor management and the public representation there, and fearful of a one-man director is in this bill. Yeah.
Does the bill, I haven't read that part of it, does the bill call for the approval by the legislative body?
Are you asking me, Senator?
What?
Are you asking me?
Anybody.
Oh, well, I don't think that it does.
No, for the appointment, the approval by the board of this appointment of the director, the board would have to approve.
Not in this bill.
Their recommendation.
Their amendment, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Correct.
How come he missed the net of being approved by the Senate?
I don't know. Now,
is that in 10-15?
Is it in the bill now?
No.
The approval of the Senate.
Subject to confirmation under the general statute.
It would be subject to confirmation by the Senate.
They are now. Yes.
Right. Okay.
But with the new director, is what I'm asking. What?
According to this bill, no, unless it falls into another general clause or category. Insofar as the appeal system itself within the compensation board, this bill on page 8, lines 15 through 22, creates a new concept and sets forth another step in the appeals process. We have heard much argument and testimony the past few weeks relative to the fact that there are too many appeal steps and that this is costly to industry. This provision of the bill sets forth another step by having a reconsideration of the previous determination made by the Evaluation Division. This provision is similar to the present Social Security law and procedure. Under that procedure, after original denial of your disability, one can ask for a reconsideration, after which you then go to a hearing. In dealing with Social Security claims over the past few years, it becomes rather obvious that the reconsideration step is one which reaps no rewards for either party. It is a step which simply rubber stamps that which has previously been done. This reconsideration step contained in this bill is simply an added cost factor which will not accomplish anything regarding either the workman or the employer.
Would this would that delay procedure mean a person or a say an employer or use this to his advantage or even a claimant attorney if they could go to the evaluation back to the evaluation division with new evidence? Could this be used by management or?
Well, it definitely could be used by management. That's why you have a proposal.
Some tactics to just to delay the procedure?
Certainly, it's a delay to get to a hearing is what it is.
Right.
Yes, and then the requirement where they talk about advising the claimant that he need not have an attorney is another delay.
Actually could result in more delays than we have under the present.
And let me point out one thing, is they contemplate the fact that if you have new evidence, then you go back to evaluation. Well, where that new evidence in 99% of the cases comes from is from the attorney who is now representing the claimant. Injured workmen don't go out and have exams on their own or get medical reports. They don't know what it's all about. So when you say that there is new evidence, you must assume that they've already gone to an attorney, and therefore they will be represented at reconsideration and then at hearing. So to me, it's a fruitless step. It's just an added cost factor. It's another level of bureaucracy put in there. On page 9 of Senate Bill 1050, line 21, the authority or jurisdiction of the board concerning its own motion powers is limited by the phrase, quote, made by the board, close quote. As the present law now reads, the Workmen's Compensation Board has continuing jurisdiction over any and all claims and can at any time, upon its own motion, change a previous order. There is no limitation at the present time as to what type of order the board can modify so long as it is a compensation matter. This bill would not allow the board to change any orders that were previously made by a court. Thousands of workmen's claims are last determined by a court, and this would limit the board's power in taking any further action, such as reopening or even reducing benefits. This is simply another attempt to further limit the workman regarding his rights. Perhaps an example is appropriate. If a workman was injured in 1967, he requests a hearing on his disability, which is appealed to the board and then to the circuit court. The last order in his claim is therefore a circuit court order awarding him 50% disability. In 1977, he needs surgery on his back, which is unquestionably related to his 1967 industrial injury. Now, I'll add to what I have written. His aggravation rights, of course, have run now because more than 5 years have transpired. So his only right is own motion. Under the present law, the Workmen's Compensation Board could order the insurance company to reopen the claim for time loss, medical benefits, and further permanent disability. Under the proposed amendment,
or 1050. The Workmen's Compensation Board could not enter such an order since the final former order or award was not made by the board, but was made by the circuit court. There does not appear to be any logical rationale for this amendment other than to further limit the workmen's benefits. On page 10, lines 11 and 12, the proposed bill would, for all practical purposes, negate the claimant's right to even have a hearing. This amendment specifically provides that no evidence is admissible at the hearing that had not been previously considered by the evaluation division. The important question is what evidence is usually available at the evaluation level. The evaluation team has two types of evidence, namely written medical reports and sometimes vocational rehabilitation reports. This is the only evidence that they have. Therefore, the claimant, having not previously testified or introduced evidence at the evaluation level, could not introduce his testimony at the hearing level. His wife could not testify, nor could he have his doctor personally present to testify. If he obtained a further report from his doctor that was not available at evaluation, he could not introduce that written report. The effect of this provision is to negate the worker's right to even appear at his own hearing. It is even difficult.
Senator,
excuse me for interrupting, but the previous Roy Green and the other witness was with him. Did their amendment cure the problem here, or only part of it?
Is that where they limited the medical and vocational?
Yes.
That would allow the claim to testify and other lay people.
Would it allow enough?
No, because it prohibits introduction of further medical evidence.
They argued that by prohibiting the introduction of further medical evidence, that this would encourage taking it back to the evaluation level rather than getting it into a hearing. Did that seem possible to you?
Encourage taking it back to evaluation?
Yeah. They have this re-evaluation.
Oh, this consultation with the evaluation division? Is that what you meant? Frankly, when we're talking
about... I need
some
help here. Their idea was that rather than getting it into a hearing, if there was some new medical or vocational evidence that should affect the claim, rather than getting into a hearing with a lawyer and so forth, which is going to cost more money, that it should be taken back to the original evaluation level, and that new information should be submitted there rather than having it at the hearing.
I understand what you're getting at.
All right. Do you see any particular problems with that? It seems on the surface of it to be a way to reduce the costs, litigation costs.
Well, then what happens if you get the same decision from evaluation, then you're back to a hearing, so you're on a merry-go-round, point.
Once they brought it up again in the evaluations level, then if they didn't get the determination they wanted, then they could take it. Then they would have it in the record when they went to the hearing, wouldn't they?
You'd go back to the hearing, and if you introduce more evidence at the hearing, then you'd go back to evaluation. And you'd go around and around and around and around. For what purpose? Why not have a hearing, introduce the evidence that you have, get a decision, and leave it as it is?
One last question. I don't want to hang us up on this, but the thrust of what they were saying seemed to me that if you'd had this evaluation and at that point, there wasn't enough medical for there to be much of an award. But then after that evaluation, more information came to light and stronger medical indication that the person was disabled, for example. Then if it went back there without attorneys and so forth, I thought the theory they were operating on, and I don't see them now so they can nod no if I'm wrong, but would be then it would be granted if it was meritorious.
They're assuming that, but I'm not assuming that.
And that way reduce the system costs.
As I said previously, this is exactly what Social Security has today. And in the 7 or 8 years that I've been handling Social Security, I could count the number of on my hand that have been reconsidered and granted at that level. It's just another step that you go through to get to a hearing. It's just not done.
Adverse determination, even if more information comes up, they just come up with the same determination
That's
again
correct.
And end up going to a hearing.
That's correct.
But what it would have... Okay, thank you.
On the other side of the coin regarding this negating the additional evidence at hearing, the employer or the carrier could not introduce surveillance films, which are quite common, investigation reports from investigators, no evidence from the employer, or oral testimony from a vocational expert concerning the man's ability to work. It is almost unbelievable that such a proposal is even being made and considered. You have a situation where the workmen of this state are now fighting to even have the right to appear in front of an independent referee to tell that referee his story concerning his permanent disability. When you consider that previous to 1965, the workers of this state had a right to a jury trial in a circuit court, and we are now fighting to even appear in front of an independent administrative referee, one must take stock and look around. The worker is the backbone of this society. He is the individual who makes the system go. Individuals belonging to two minority groups, low-income groups, are protected by our legislative assemblies. They are granted absolute rights to a day in court concerning criminal matters, and the state pays for their attorneys. Legal aid corporations are federally funded and make sure that the low-income or minority individual has an attorney provided free. Yet the workmen of this state have been told that they do not have the right to a jury trial regarding their industrially caused injuries and must be heard in front of an administrative referee. Senate Bill 1050 is now saying to the workmen of this state that they no longer even have the right to personally appear in front of an administrative referee to tell their story. If, on the other hand, it is the intention of the proponents of this bill to have the evaluation division personally interview each and every injured workman, it would require approximately 40 more evaluation teams. In 1974-75, there were 35,000 evaluations made by this division. If they were able to evaluate five per day, which allows for 1 hour on each matter, one team could, under the most optimistic situation, close 1,200 claims a year. When we are considering costs in the system, it would be obvious that the costs under this proposal would be extraordinarily high. Therefore, in regard to the appeal system concerning the administrative function within the board, this bill has not reduced the appeals process, but has added to it a step of reconsideration. Turning now to the court system of appeals, this bill removes the circuit court from any consideration of the workman's situation. The proponents of removing the circuit court from the system continually discuss the fact that the appeals process is costly to the system and that the premium dollar would be reduced if the circuit courts were removed. I can only assume that they are concerned with the awards of disability made by the circuit courts and thus feel that if those awards were reduced and not given at all, the cost would also be reduced. However, out of 35,000 claims closed by the evaluation division in 1974 and 1975, the circuit courts of this state heard 333 cases. 71% of those cases affirmed the previous board's orders, and 44 cases increased permanent partial disability, an average of $2,863 per claim, or a total of $125,972. Therefore, the total cost in terms of permanent partial disability that the circuit court places on the system is $125,000 out of a total premium dollar of $213 million in the fiscal year 1974-1975. This is hardly an exorbitant expense or cost to the system. Question then may arise, why then have the circuit court in the system if its effect is only negligible? The effect of the circuit court in the system is not in awards of disability, but in checks and balances that it offers on the system generally. No administrative agency should be allowed to operate without checks and balances. We should also make sure that the most efficient method to secure those checks and balances is built into the system. The Workmen's Compensation Board, through its decision-making process, through its referees and its orders on review, makes policy and legal interpretations of our compensation statutes. The circuit courts provide a check and balance on those decisions. For example, previous to 1973, there was no distinction between a disabling and a non-disabling claim. A disabling claim is one which, in addition to medical benefits, results in time loss or permanent disability to the workman. A non-disabling claim is one that results in medical benefits only, such as a cut finger. The legislature in 1973 was required to make a distinction between these claims due to the previous policy of the Workers' Compensation Board. That policy was contrary to 656.268, which required the Workers' Compensation Board to notify the injured worker that his claim was closed and that he had a right to request a hearing if he was not satisfied with the closure and the board's conclusion that he was entitled to no time loss or permanent disability. Excuse me. The Workers' Compensation Board took a position and established an administrative policy that those claims which resulted in only medical benefits would be closed by simply stamping the file and no notification whatsoever would be sent to the workman. In 1970, the time of the Magdalene Wolf decision, which I've attached as an exhibit, there had been in the board's estimate over 80,000 claims per year that fell into this category, wherein the workmen were receiving absolutely no notification that their claim had been closed and that they had rights concerning appeals on that claim. The board further stated at that time that there may well have been over 300,000 claims accumulated since January 1, 1965, in which this procedure was followed. This policy and decision of the board was appealed to the circuit court, and the court quickly ordered the compensation board to issue notifications to workmen in all cases that the claim had been closed and that they had a right to request a hearing. I am attaching a copy of the compensation board's order on review in that case, plus the circuit court's findings of facts and conclusions of law. This is one clear example of the checks and balances that must remain in this system. The circuit court is the most efficient and expeditious manner in which to supply this check and balance. It is easily seen by the case cited how the rights of the workman can be thrown out the window by an interpretation of the statute. In 1970, over 300,000 injured workers had not been apprised of their rights and notified due to the administrative interpretation of the law. It is extremely vital to the workings of this system that the circuit court remain. One might then say, could not the Court of Appeals supply this check and balance? The answer is maybe. It is qualified because, as stated, the most beneficial check and balance system is one which is most efficient in terms of economics. The circuit court appeal is a relatively inexpensive appeal and one which results in a rather quick decision. The Court of Appeals, on the other hand, is a more expensive route for the workman to take due to the requirements procedurally, such as filing the briefs and 25 copies of the same. I have no doubt that the injured worker would not appeal in many cases to the Court of Appeals concerning these issues, but would appeal to the Circuit Court. If the proponents of this bill feel that the Circuit Court is costly because it enters decisions protecting the rights at that time of 300,000 workmen, then I would agree that it is costly. However, I do believe that we want a system that protects both the employer and the injured worker's rights. The bill goes on to provide on page 20, lines 16 through 20, that the Court of Appeals will hear the entire matter on the record forwarded by the board, and it may hear additional evidence concerning disability that was not obtainable at the time of the hearing. Looking back to page 10, lines 11 and 12, at the provision which makes evidence inadmissible, if it were not previously provided to the evaluation division, one wonders upon what basis now the Court of Appeals will hear additional evidence that was not obtainable at the hearing. In other words, may now the claimant testify in front of the Court of Appeals and have his wife and doctor present evidence? Is the Court of Appeals now to become a trial court rather than an appellate court? The Court of Appeals is obviously an appellate court to review the record previously made at lower court levels. The provision of this law would turn the Court of Appeals into a trial court, which is hardly practical. The proponents of this bill apparently felt that the provision allowing for the introduction of additional evidence after hearing was a good one. With that, we wholeheartedly agree. However, the appellate court is not the place to hear additional evidence, and since this bill is taking out the trial court, namely the circuit court, the workman has lost the right to introduce additional evidence that was not obtainable at the time of the hearing. However, as mentioned above, this bill, from a practical standpoint, takes away the claimant's right to a hearing in the first place because he cannot introduce any evidence that was not previously submitted to the evaluation division. Oregon Trial Lawyers Association feels that the best way to approach this appeal system is not to add steps, as this bill does, but to reduce steps.
we would think that the reduction should take place in the administrative agency, since a system that allows three or four shots by an agency is not practical. We would suggest that the Workman's Compensation Board review be repealed and that the Workman's Compensation Board be given the appropriate time to properly administer the law and its agency. We feel that the Circuit Court should stay in the appeal system for reasons set forth above, and it should remain de novo. We feel that the appeal from the Circuit Court to the Court of Appeals should be changed from de novo to substantial evidence. The effect of this would be to reduce the amount of appeals that are made to the Court of Appeals. With this proposal, you would therefore eliminate the step on review to the Workman's Compensation Board and effectually curtail the amount of appeals that are made to the Court of Appeals. If the appeal system is the cause of any cost problem, this proposal would have a beneficial effect. There has been much discussion that the present system within the Workman's Compensation Board is not working beneficially. Attached to this testimony as an exhibit is an article prepared for the Interim Committee on Trade and Economic Development during their hearings on workman's compensation. In that article, you will note that the Evaluation Division entered approximately 35,000 determination orders. There were 2,700 requests for hearings from those 35,000 determination orders, which is about 7.5% of all determinations made on disabling claims. Stated in reverse, in 92.5% of all determinations of disabling claims, there was no request for hearing or appeal filed. Any administrative agency who is making the right decision in claims totaling 35,000 in number, 92.5% of the time, is, in my opinion, doing a very admirable job. Of those 2,700 requests for hearings filed in 1975, 1,773 were settled amicably by the parties by stipulation, were dismissed or otherwise disposed of without a hearing. This represents approximately 65% of those requests for hearing. 35% of the requests for hearings then went to decision and order by the referees. The article gives a breakdown as to the results of those decisions and orders and the total overall dollar effect. The amount of the permanent partial disability awards that were increased by the referee is only slightly in excess of 1% of the total earned premium in the year 1975. This is hardly a sufficient enough cost factor on the system to prohibit the workman from appearing in front of a referee and having his day in court. Because of the hue and cry regarding the cost factors in workman's compensation, we should be very careful to avoid a rush to make drastic changes in this law, which are going to have to be changed in 2 years, because of the inequities and the frank derogation of the workers' rights under our system.
Dave, you would agree that there is a need to save as far as the Oregon system is concerned. You don't disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that, no.
Okay. And you're working with us to attempt to save the system money?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Any further questions,
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Senator Jernstedt.
Earlier in your testimony on page 8, I believe it was, there were a bunch of figures about the out of the appeals from the Evaluation Division in 1974, the Circuit Court of this state heard 333 cases. How many of those cases went to Circuit Court at the request of the worker, and how many from management, you know?
I can get that for you, but I don't have it on the tip of my tongue.
I'd like to know.
Sure, be glad to get it for you.
No, Senator Wires?
Yes. Craig, would you comment on the assertion I've heard that it isn't the cost? You say there's only a 1% total, the amount of permanent partial disability awards were increased by the referee and only slightly in excess of 1% of the total earned premium in 1975. The assertion I've heard is that it isn't the cost of the hearing, it isn't the amount of money that goes to the attorneys.
There's a note, Peterson.
But it's the effect of having these appeal provisions there and the results that come about, that it that causes the initial determination to be too high, or the hearing award to be too high. There's that the claimants have the different levels of appeal intimidated or something along that line, intellectually intimidated.
That's what that figure is brought out for, is to show that in 74-75, the total amount of awards granted by the referees after hearing represented less than 1% of the total premium dollar. So if anyone says to me that that's why we have increased costs, I say that's false. That is not the case.
Well, what about the argument that the original determination is made too high because there's a fear of reversal?
I disagree with that. I, having worked with the board and see the results of evaluation division and what they have done, I certainly don't think they're too high. In fact, I think you will find that representative of industry will say that they are over the board too low, and one of the purposes of all this is to get that higher. So I don't think that's correct at all.
Get what higher?
The initial evaluation.
Yeah. Well, if one of the purposes is to get the initial evaluation higher, wouldn't that cause, how could you have your cake and eat it there?
I don't know.
Get the original determination higher and still reduce the overall cost.
This is the fallacy of this reconsideration step. They are saying in this bill that if we get the additional evidence to evaluation, that they will grant the workman what he wants and thus prevent a hearing and thus save costs. I don't see that, because if you go to a hearing in the first place, the increased cost represents less than 1% of the total premium dollar. So where are you saving?
This 1% starts with the hearing and goes from there on through the Court of Appeals? Only 1% of the premium?
No, this is after hearings, after the referee, not before the Board on Review or the Circuit Court.
This is after hearing.
That is
what happens. Everything that happens after hearing is only 1% of the cost of the system?
No, just after hearing. After that, there's another breakdown, which is in my exhibit. But as you can see, the Circuit Courts, Senator, the Circuit Courts in that same year awarded only $125,000 worth of benefits for the entire year. So not being a mathematician, what percentage of $125,000 represents to $213 million is your percentage as to what the Circuit Courts have done in increasing costs in the system of this state in that year?
Well, then how can those statements be made consistent that we're going to get a fairer... Are you sure it's a better determination for the worker, or is the word fairer, which might include a smaller determination?
In the Circuit Courts?
No, at the original determination or redetermination.
At hearing?
Before the hearing. Didn't you say that the part of the contention for doing away with the Circuit Court and reducing the litigation of these things in general is that in exchange we're going to do a better job of getting the original determination, and the workers will be happier and they won't want to appeal?
Correct. That's the point as far as I understand their testimony.
And your argument is that there's not enough money awarded after the original hearing to save much money.
My point, Senator, is this, that we have been hearing for the last year that the appeal system is costing this state so much premium dollar, and if we reduce the appeals, if we cut down on the worker's right to get to a hearing, that we're going to save money. What I'm saying, Senator, is this is not going to save money, because you're talking about a very small percentage of the total premium dollar that's spent today. And you're talking about a very small percentage now, and they want to reduce it more. I think they're talking about saving money in the wrong area.
What does that draw you to any conclusion about what's up here, what's going on here?
Very definitely. As I said in my testimony, I think that this whole bill, 1050, is an attempt to screw down the workman even further. When you consider, as I said, in 1965, he had a full-blown jury trial on his disability. Then he is relegated to administrative hearing. Now this bill says that he can't even testify in his own hearing. That's what this bill says.
He can't even have his wife testify. He can't even have his doctor testify. I think if you look at that over the last 10 years and see what we're up against and what the overall plan is, it's very obvious.
How will the worker find out about this politically?
I have no idea. At this point in time, they don't know a thing about it, except through their union representative.
Or shouldn't discuss politics.
There's going to be a subcommittee. I'm disappointed in the proposals of the AOI or the proposals and the amendments that are here today. And I think that there's going to have to be some give and take on this. And I don't expect labor to do it all. Unless there is, why, there will be no compromise, is my feeling. So I'd like to announce at this time that there will be a subcommittee composed of Wally Karsas, Jen Wires, and myself. And I'd like these people as advisors: Bill Peterson, who is a hearing officer, Cliff Allison, Chuck Gill, Carl Fredericks, Roy Green, Jack Kalinowski, Bob Kennedy, George Lewis, L.B. Day, and Dave Krager. And I think we've got to work out a compromise on this. Obviously, they left us with no area of compromise in what the proposals we had today, and frankly, I'm disappointed. So with this, I have to be out of here at 3 o'clock. In fact, I should be out before 3 o'clock. But if there's no further questioning, I would ask Bob Kennedy.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Bob Kennedy, representing the Oregon AFL-CIO. I have no amendments to offer, so...
First, Bob, I may have to leave before you're through testifying, but I'd ask staff to also arrange a meeting for this group as soon as possible.
The Oregon AFL-CIO is not happy with Senate Bill 1050, and we have not been too enthusiastic about changing the structure of the Workmen's Compensation Board. However, to prove that we are interested in making the Workmen's Compensation System more efficient, responsive, and save money for the employers, we have some comments to make about this proposal. Early in the session, I told many of you that I would agree to eliminate a step in the appeals process. We propose to eliminate the Workmen's Compensation Board from the appeals process. The board, because of reviewing cases, has been overloaded with work in the past and unable to give as much attention to administration as they possibly should. They then could have adequate time to handle the balance of the duties that are theirs at the present time. With the adoption of this idea, savings are made in the appeals process. And second, you don't add the cost of a director. With this change, to the extent of disability claim would go in this manner. First, the evaluation division, then directly to the hearings division, circuit court on de novo, and to the court of appeals on substantial evidence, and finally to the Supreme Court in a very rare case. For some time after I had first heard that 79% of the cases that are decided by referees get a raise, I began to think that it would be a good idea for any new evidence to go back to the evaluation division. But if you analyze the problem, it's just not that simple. And this appears to be a two-edged sword. I'm afraid that there would never be any testimony from the claimant, his wife, doctor, neighbor, or anyone else that may have pertinent information to get before a court. I'm sure that the employers would not want to give up their right to bring in film or experts on pertinent subjects and any other evidence that they may have to prove their side of the issue. I find, as proposed by the bill, this only adds another step in the appeals chain, which brings on a delay, and delays cost money. In our estimation, by not adopting the proposed change as re-referring to the evaluations division is another savings. Moving then to the hearings division, we want these people to remain independent as they are now in their judgments. I want to comment on a statement I made on Senate Bill 1049 regarding referees and the Court of Appeals judge. Someone called to my attention that I had, in their estimation, implied that these people had in fact broken the law by making PT permanent totals of permanent partials. To clarify what I was talking about on very serious injuries, it is a very subjective decision and can correctly be made either way. We feel very strongly that a claimant has the right, if he or she so chooses, to have his day in court before a judge. Therefore, we want the circuit court retained by changing the law as we proposed to the Court of Appeals on substantial evidence. This is, I am told by legal counsel, a half-step savings in the appeals process. I personally have no hang-up about the change in the name of the Workers' Compensation Department from Workers' Compensation Board, but the bill calls for workmen's, which I disagree with. The present name needs to be corrected if kept. I understand that it would take from 100 to 200 amendments to this bill to make it fit our concept. In summary, we have proposed 1.5 step removed from the appeals process. We have not agreed to adding back in cost items or delays such as a director and the proposed reconsideration of all new evidence through the evaluation division. If our idea is adopted, the employer will save money and the injured worker will not have lost any benefits or rights. This concludes the prepared testimony of the Oregon AFL-CIO.
Incidentally, Bob, we already passed the bill making it the Workers' Compensation Board. And if this bill did pass, we'd have to change all of this.
Okay, fine.
Particular bill, if it were to pass. Are there any questions of Bob? If not, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
I think that.
Tom Murphy?
Tom, are you going to be very long?
No, very short.
Okay.
As short as any lawyer can be.
Well,
jeez.
We'll judge that when you're through.
Tom Murphy, representing the Oregon Trial Lawyers. That's Alan T. Murphy, Jr. I just want to point out a couple of things. It's been pretty much covered by Dave Kreiger in here, but I'd like to have you look at the language on page 8, starting at line 15. Since we're in the baseball season, I always try to look at these things as whether there might be a curveball in here, or also whether a good counsel on the other side might argue certain propositions. I could make a proposition in this particular part of the language. The language says the evaluation division shall reconsider determinations made pursuant to this section, subsection, whenever one of the parties makes a request therefore, and presents evidence regarding the claim which was not available at the time of the original determination was made. Now comes what I think is perhaps unintentionally a curveball. However, any such request for reconsideration must be made prior to the time a request for hearing is made pursuant to ORS 656-283. Normally in these cases, an injured workman comes into a lawyer's office, the lawyer immediately files a request and gets the medical information. He has filed a request for hearing at this stage. He gets the medical information, looks and finds out there's a complete loophole in the situation. The fellow's got an orthopedic problem and has been taken care of by a general practitioner or someone else like that. He then sends them to a doctor and then gets a new report. That he could not request a reconsideration after he made the initial request for review with this statute in there. In other words, if you combine that with what section on page 10, which says no evidence is admissible at a hearing that has not previously been considered by the evaluation division, he couldn't take this new medical report and ask for reconsideration, because the only time he can ask for reconsideration in this statute is before he's asked for the review that is presently asked in all of these cases at the present time. We submit that that makes the bill, as far as I can see, totally unworkable from a claimant standpoint. Was that short enough, Senator?
Very good, Tom. Best speech you ever made. Any questions first, Tom?
Oh, pardon.
Have any questions, any members of the committee? If not, thank you, Tom, and we are adjourned.
Let me get...